Welcome to the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. I'm your host, James Renford Powell, author of the Renford books, and author and creator of the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. This includes the original book, The Laws of Material Wealth, a workbook with five exercises per chapter, and then four DVDs for those of you who don't want to read. And also 54 weeks of material, support material that was sent by email, and then they covered it in 54 shows here. That was the beginning of the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program, which we are continuing. In these shows now, I've tried to have on people from a wide range of activities, business and studies, for your benefit. And of course, you can call in during the show, 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. And if you want to ask a question of my guest, and my guest this evening is Patricia Bullock Williams. Now, Patricia has been on the show before, along with Pat Frascona, who is the attorney who represented two of the soldiers whose medical records were made classified. This is due to the Rendlesham Forest incident, where a UFO landed between two U.S. bases, nuclear, in England. And so she was on the show for a little bit there. We'll also be talking about Rendlesham Forest some, but we'll also be talking about a number of other surrounding issues and more about her career and what she does. And so I'll get back and introduce Patricia right after the reading of the Renford Revelations. The Renford Revelations is my blog. It comes out each Wednesday night before the show. I read it. It then goes up to www.iam-cor.org and /blog. So you can go back and look at any of the blogs that have been put up there. You can comment on them. You can argue with me about them. Do whatever you like. That's up to you. Just remember, if you've got anybody who would like to listen to the show, they're not online, or traveling or can't get to a computer, they can also listen by calling that same number, 347-838-9142. Also, that 347-838-9142, then press the 1 button if you want to ask a question or make a comment when we get that guest in the studio. All right, let's look at this Renford Revelation for this evening. It's simply called Definitions, and I wrote this because of concerns I have about the way certain words, and in fact, we've talked about it on this show, like you hear people talking about, oh, that's an apocalyptic event. Well, whenever I hear them saying it, I know they don't know what the word means to start with, because the word apocalypse does not mean catastrophic or major time-ending event. The word apocalypse means revelation. It means a revelation. That's why the book is called the Book of Revelation. It is the apocalypse of John, the revelation to John. But we have many, many words like that that have come to take on another meaning. This one, this blog is called Definitions. I've had readers question my definition of various words, including the word metaphysics. The defining of words is all important for complete and accurate communications. The premier thing I want a student to understand is what I want to communicate, but I want it to be a correct definition. Each religious or philosophical group tends to put their slant on the meaning of a word. It is not always an outright distortion, but the slant can be just as damaging. A definition may be inaccurate, but if the student understands what the teacher is trying to communicate, the teacher's objective has been reached. It is not only a matter of what a dictionary says a word means, it is what it has come to mean to people. To the communicator, the primary objective is to get across his message. Many teachers manage this with symbolism and others deliberately use a word they know doesn't mean what they say it does because that is what their audience thinks it means. Powerful institutions such as churches, political parties, government agencies, and the media coin words and phrases and give them their meaning. It is also true that the same word may have more than one meaning depending upon the institution. I attempt to stay with the accepted meaning, but in many cases the meaning has become tarnished by incorrect usages to the point that one can't communicate properly using the proper word. For this reason, I provide a fairly extensive glossary with each book. In my glossaries, I tell the reader what I mean by a particular word. Even if it is not exactly the way it is used by people in my field of study or what the dictionary says, the reader knows what I mean when I use the word. I cannot allow ambiguity because it would not be an honest or accurate communication. The following are examples of the definitions I give to four words. These are words that you're familiar with: religion, theology, philosophy, and metaphysics. I will give you the dictionary meaning, then the way it has been defined by certain schools and institutions and generally accepted. Finally, I will give you my definition and explain why. I have chosen to use the examples from a book called The Kabbalion, published by the Yogi Publication Society. It was written by three initiates of the mystery teachings whose names are not revealed. They put a slant on the meaning of these four words with which I do not agree. Instead of simply defining the words, they show a distinct preference for two over the other two. The dictionary a particular institutionalized or personal system of beliefs and practices relating to the divine, a set of strongly held beliefs. People's beliefs and opinions concerning the existence, nature, and worship of a deity or deities, and divine involvement in the universe and human life. The initiates define religion as institutional realization of the existence of the all and one's relationship to it. Now, there's nothing wrong with these definitions. The fact is that the initiates prefer the word religion to theology, as we shall see. I would add to this definition of religion as follows. This is my definition: codified, culturally entwined belief systems using symbols and rituals, the acceptance of which is based on faith, organized acceptance of the concept of the divine strongly influenced by tradition. Now, if you go to the blog and you look at these definitions by the dictionary and by this particular group that I'm using as an example, and then you look at my definition, you'll be able to compare this. This may be a little bit obtuse for some of you, may not be very interested in this, but the point is what I'm hoping, a general point I'm hoping you'll get. The dictionary says of theology, it's the study of religion and God's relationship to the world. The initiates say, now that's the dictionary. The initiates say it means attempts of men to ascribe personality qualities and characteristics to it. Their theories regarding its affairs will, desires, plans, and design, and their assumption of the office of middlemen between the all and the people. Now, this is still not a bad definition, but obviously one that's less flattering and definitely more critical than that of the definition they gave for religion. One might consider my definition as critical as well, but it's based in fact. This is it. Theology is the study of religion's theory and the relation of God to man. It is a dissecting of religious text in an attempt to find a real or deeper meaning. Looking for the meaning of the words in the ancient languages they were written has led to an emphasis on the definition of words, and because of this, it has become more legalistic and narrower. The dictionary describes philosophy as the branch of knowledge or academic study devoted to the systematic examination of basic concepts such as truth, existence, reality, causality, and freedom. The initiates say, that philosophy is the inquiry after knowledge of things knowable and thinkable. Again, both of the definitions are reasonable. Their slant or prejudice is in favor of religion over theology, and as we shall see, it is in preference for philosophy over metaphysics. If I accepted their definitions, I'd have to agree with them, as would any understanding person. My definition is a little different. Philosophy is a general study from which each must extract his own understanding. It is a discipline that involves the process of continuous questioning without the benefit of a specific system for self-unfoldment. In itself, philosophy is not a system, but a category of study. In other words, philosophy is organized asking of questions. Now, the dictionary says that metaphysics is this. It says it's the branch of philosophy concerned with the study of the nature of being and beings, existence, time, space, and causality. Now, this is a good enough definition, but certainly not complete. All right? It's better than the initiate's definition because in it you have a negative charge as opposed to a proper definition. They write, metaphysics is the attempt to carry the inquiry over and beyond the boundaries and into regions unknowable and unthinkable, and with the same tendency as that of theology. Now, this is an incorrect supposition. It's to the contrary, this is my definition of metaphysics. Metaphysics involves no speculation. It is about knowing the process of physical manifestation. Thought creates form. Without thought, there can be no form. Metaphysics is the study of the process of creation. The dictionary is correct as far as it goes. Metaphysics is the underlying principle of the unmanifested becoming manifested. It is the power behind and causal to the physical manifestation. And as I've mentioned on this show on occasion, thought creates form. Without thought, there can be no form. And when you look around your room to everything that you see, everything in it, every picture, the clothes you're wearing, piece of equipment, the carpet, everything had to exist in somebody's mind before it could possibly be manifested. So what we have in the physical world is what has come and is manifested from mind. Thought creates form. Without thought, there can be no form. And that is my blog. That is my Renford Revelation for July the 15th, 2015. Now, I'd like you to meet again my guest, Patricia Bullock Williams. I'll tell you a little bit about Patricia. She's a field investigator for Mississippi MUFON, the non-governmental organization that investigates reports from the public who have seen but cannot identify flying objects. She investigates such sightings and is very familiar with the Rendlesham Forest incident, which occurred near an American air base in England. She's been on this show appearing with Pat Frescona, as I mentioned earlier, the attorney for the two soldiers that he managed to get their disability because their medical records had been classified for something like 30 years. Certainly, Patricia is more than just a field investigator and one who studies Rendlesham. She's has her doctorate of divinity. She's a certified hypnotherapist. She studied with Dr. Raymond Moody in Atlanta, a leading researcher of the life after death phenomena. And she's a contributor to Nick Pope's book, Encounter at Rendlesham Forest. And I'm very pleased to have her with me tonight. Thanks for being with me, Patricia.
Thank you, Jim, for having me. One thing I do need to correct you on, I'm not officially with MUFON as a field investigator. Okay. In our section of Jackson, our MUFON has kind of gone deactivated, you could say. So we're kind of in a group MUFON situation instead of our individual. Yes. So, but I am honored to be included in the talk as a MUFON field investigator. Hang around with a lot of MUFON people, so it's very, very easy to do that on. And speaking of MUFON, I really enjoyed hearing your talk at the MUFON World UFO Festival in Memphis on World UFO Day. I thought you did a great job.
It was a fun thing, even though we had a lot of things go wrong. And I understand that there were somewhere between 100 and 150 seats sold for the speakers, and there were a number of children and so forth there. But my own presentation was missing my slides, illustrations, and Mr. Peter Robbins' books didn't show up. And as I mentioned, one of the speakers didn't make it at all. He missed his flight. But at the same time, there was a lot of enthusiasm and quite a few people. And I'm glad you could make it up for that.
Yes, I'm glad I did too. And considering that World UFO Day was on a Thursday, which, you know, I thought that was a pretty good turnout for the, you know, the hot weather of the South that we have. And I'm so glad I bought your book, The Father Confusers, and I can't wait to start reading it. So I just, and anybody who's listening, if you get a chance to hear,
I don't know how you managed to wait this long once you got it to start reading it.
Oh, well, I traveled for 2 weeks after. It took me like 2 weeks before I got back home after I left there.
Oh, so
I had a couple of stops. Yeah. So,
been
but
on the road.
Yes, exactly. So if anybody has a chance to hear James Renford Powell in person, I highly recommend his talk. It was fascinating. And you had everybody, I looked around and everybody was on the edge of their seats. Even 8-year-old children were just fascinated. And I think you had the biggest crowd of anybody who spoke that day. So,
I'm not sure they were most of the people. Really, the star for the whole event was Travis, and that's very unfortunate that he missed his flight. And also the weather contributed to, you know, in Memphis, it's easy for people to get afraid of the weather. And when they talked about it being 70% rain, we lost a lot of the vendors.
That's true.
I think about 70% of the vendors didn't show. But nevertheless, I was pretty pleased with it. And it is, I think the plan is to have one of those every year. Probably will not be at the Pine Hill Golf. It'll probably be a hotel next time. But it's I'm still looking forward to the next edition of it.
I enjoyed hearing Captain Lamar Todd's story. I had never heard that before. You know, his whole story. So I thought that was very interesting.
I think it's always interesting to hear a trained observer, you know, a police officer, and that they were four in his tactical group. When they give a testimony as to what they saw, it just bears a lot of weight. As far as I'm concerned, it means something.
Especially with the radar and how it left there, and within moments, the highway patrols of these other, you know, in these other areas of Tennessee saw it. And and you're right, having the trained observers, that's part of the reason Rendlesham is such a popular story, is that most of the witnesses, at least the major ones, are trained police officers who are security personnel who are trained to assess a situation and figure out what's going on. And that's part of the reason it's, bearing.
Yeah. For the benefit of the, for listeners who maybe weren't available for the interview with Pat Frescona, the attorney for the soldiers, could you give listeners a little review, a summary of what happened in Rendlesham Forest, where it is, and what the situation was?
Yes. In December 26th in 1980, so the day after Christmas, actually it's just a couple of hours into the next day, on an Air Force base, RAF Bitwaters, and there's also a twin base right above it, which is RAF Woodbridge. But at RAF Bitwaters, they actually saw something go down between the forest that was in between the two bases, and that's called Rendlesham Forest. They described it as looking like Christmas tree lights. And the original people who were going to go out, that one got scared. He wouldn't go out. And so they had to call Jim Penniston, who was like staff sergeant at the time, and then also John Burroughs, and then another person who hasn't really come forward into the public much, Adrian Vistenza, went out into the forest and went to this glowing light, and it ended up being a triangular craft, very similar in a way to Lamar Todd's triangular craft. And Jim Penniston is the only one who went up closer to it, and he had a notebook. He wrote down the size and sketched the pictures. He also had a camera. He took pictures of it with his camera, which did not develop. And he's at the time just praying that he's going to see NASA or Air Force on the side of this thing. And by the time he gets around it, he really didn't think he was going to survive. So he's now at this point just writing information, trying to, you know, have people know what happened. And when he got to the other side, by then he was saying he didn't care if it said China or, you know, USSR, just to have a name for it. But there ended up being a series of hieroglyphics. And you can see all this if anybody wants to go to the Rendlesham Forest Incident.com. It's a wonderful website done by Darren DuBois, who's also one of the researchers, that is very comprehensive, has a lot of this information, and also has a lot of pictures of the glyphs, the way that Jim Penniston drew them and how they've been figured out what they are before. They match up with different, they look very Egyptian hieroglyphic-like, but none of them completely match up. You might get one or two that's similar. So when he wrote those down, he took off his glove and he felt the ship. It was warm to the touch. There were lights pulsing through the ship. Almost like it's not that it was breathing, but, you know, just this pulsating light in this black alabaster ship. And
what
it was smooth
the size,
as glass. It's 9 feet by 9 feet. And
nine
roughly
feet
probably,
feet.
You know, roughly kind of maybe about 9 feet tall. So not really, not something most people could ride in. So there's not, you know, it was more like a drone, you could say, most likely.
Or maybe
so
only one person.
Yeah, they could be reclining in the side there. So when he ran his hands over the glyphs, they were etched in like sandpaper. So he ran his hands over the glyphs, and then when he touched, there was one that was bigger than the other, which is a circle with a triangle with two circles inside that triangle on the actual triangle lines. When he touched that, he had these flashes of light. Now, at that time, it was almost like it communicated with him, and he knew all this stuff. Now, if you watch it on any of the ancient aliens or anything, you'll see that they'll depict it that he was downloaded, or he saw zeros and ones at that time. He really didn't. They just kind of made the story a little bit more compact. But that night, it left in a shot. The other two witnesses saw it, but they were farther away. They lost 40 minutes of time. Time slowed down for them, and they were just were confused about where they were. And when they got back, and he went off of Jim Penniston went off duty that night, couldn't sleep, and he could see were these zeros and ones in his head. So he went up to the kitchen table, started pulling out all those kitchen pens, and you can actually see it in this website I gave you or in the book. You know, you'll see where he's scratching to make these little, you know, your old kitchen pens work. And he started just writing these zeros and ones, just to, and he started feeling better. So he kept it up, and he just wrote till he finally felt better, and he stuck them in the back of his notebook because he knew he would end up being probably kicked out of the service for being crazy, and he didn't share it with anyone. And later on, the next night, the lights came back again, and that's when Colonel Halt went out, because he was at this point going, I'm going to settle this once and for all. Now, Colonel Halt was the deputy, base deputy commander at the time. So he went out in the forest with his Lanier voice recorder, and he recorded the events of that night. And that's what the Halt tape is, and that's part of what I worked on in the book, was the retranscribing that Halt tape.
That is your contribution to Encounter at Rendlesham Forest by Nick Pope?
Yes. And what happened on was that they encountered, you know, they're looking at where it had been the night before. They read elevated radiation in those areas, but then all of a sudden more lights appeared that night and actually shot like a laser beam down at their feet. So actually Halt just went to England close to the base and did a speech right at the beginning of July. And he's been doing
this year.
And you know, this is brand new stuff. And a lot of people, especially ones in England, would say that nobody ever saw anything. It was just a lighthouse, you know, because nothing ever showed up on radar. Well, all the radar records apparently were wiped out because he's now, you know, because he's a colonel and he's retired. And most of these men are retired, so they'll talk to a colonel. And so he has all these affidavits and stuff from people from an airfield that are close to Rendlesham and close to RAF Bentwaters. And he also has the, you know, the people who are doing the radars from RAF Bentwaters and RAF Woodbridge, that they really were confirmed on the radar, just like Captain Lamar Todd's was on the... And in fact, it was going so fast, it took 2 to 3 seconds to go across their 60-mile scope. So they're thinking it went 1,000 miles an hour. And then it, you know, it came across and it stopped, and then it went into the forest, and they actually saw it, but they lost it near Rendlesham Forest. So he also has a lot of other documents and things that he has found and verified. And so I know they made a video of his talk, so there'll be more and more to come out of that whole thing on that. But it's amazing how after 35 years, there's still more to learn about this, you know?
Now, this event next to Roswell is probably the most studied of all, the most investigated and the most detailed, don't you think?
Yes.
And the one in Memphis occurred in 1977, and I've checked several different parties involved. There was a man, I think a police officer, that was playing softball or baseball at a park here called Rodney Baber Park, which is very close to where I live. And my understanding is that it simply stopped everybody. Everybody stopped to look at this thing. And then a friend of mine, Gene Bradbury, who is a retired police officer, said it came over his house in Berclair, which is near Summer, a main corridor in Memphis. And then it would have had to have veered off to the right, a little bit west, southwest, to go over Pine Hill Golf Club. And it's there that Captain Lamar Todd and a tactical team, I mean, these guys had scope rifles and stuff, it's a tactical team, and they followed it, and WKNO went out with him and got, he gave them his on-the-scene interview of the location. And it's interesting that at different parts, it was seen to be triangular over Rodney Baber Park. Bradbury said that he could see the lights of it, but couldn't see the outline of the tri-corner. But all of them described this as big as a football field and moving very slow, which is totally, we're talking at Rendlesham Forest about something that's really quite small by comparison.
Exactly.
But this thing was quite large. And one of the police officers, instead of getting out his binoculars, and they had binoculars with him, he got out his rifle to look through the scope. And when he pointed it up there, this thing just went bang, out of sight. Up, it disappeared very quickly. So they were being, they may have been watching them as closely as they were being watched, you know.
It sounds like it,
but,
yes.
But that was, and also Captain Lamar Todd also talked about an earlier incident where he saw something look like a large spotlight, and which was similar to what I saw in Hong Kong, that late at night we thought it was a helicopter with a spotlight on. But it was moving very fast, and then it turned to the right and just disappeared like a white light. So, and that was something that was also seen by Cathay Pacific pilots in Hong Kong. It was, that was headline news there, and this incident was headline news in the old Press Cemetery here in 1977, and got a lot of notoriety around the in the state. But of course, like any, like all of these incidences, they just go off the radar and you don't hear much more about them. But Rendlesham Forest has been a reoccurring thing. It just, they keep on coming up with more information and more investigation on it. And I'm sure that you enjoyed doing that.
Yes, and you know, I think because of all these people retiring and the fact that so much of this was kept secret and not, you know, it's taken a while for this information to get out, you know, about the now, about the case. Yeah.
Do you have, I'd like you to take a minute and we just a little past the top of the hour, and give listeners your contact information, a website or email or whatever you like, if they would like to get more information. If they'd like possibly to find Encounter at Rendlesham Forest by Nick Pope, and with your contribution?
Sure. On Facebook, you can find me, Patricia Bullock on Facebook, and I have two group pages. One is a Mississippi UFO Network page, and also the Mars Network page. And then I have a very easy email. Anybody can email me at patbullock@aol.com. You can't get easier than that.
Yeah. So. Now, you mentioned Mars Analyst. Tell us what you're doing, what's your participation in the Mars Analysis program.
Probably about 4 years ago, I started analyzing pictures from what's called a high-resolution imaging science camera that's on the Mars orbiter. It's known as a high-rise photos. And I actually got interested in analyzing Mars from listening to an interview with Andrew Weber talking about Andrew Bishago, who is a leader of, you could say, or head of the Mars Anomaly Research Society. Mm-hmm. And one of the photo analysts at that time took me under his wing, Ross Curley, and helped me, you know, steer me to the right place on where to start looking at the satellite imaging and to find, you know, different anomalies. And one of mine that was picked up by Andy, and he wrote a paper on it. And then, but a lot of mine I tend to find are look more like structures. And that it's just fascinating. And some of them are on the Mars Network page. But and a lot of people are like, well, what if they're not structures? It's fine, because it'll be fascinating to find out what they really are. But years before, you know, today or yesterday, you know, we just flew by Pluto, and they're, you know, they're getting pictures that are, you know, it's going to take 16 months to download all these pictures that they have. But they, you know, right today they've announced that there's these huge ice mountains with, you know, it's like the Rockies, but it's totally made out of ice. Well, you know, it took forever for them to, for NASA announce that there was water on Mars. All of us that were in the Mars, you know, doing Mars research, we knew there was water on Mars. I mean, it was very obvious for years before it was ever announced. So I find it interesting how in one day, you know, it just shows how things have changed, that they're a little bit more open to things, or, you know, telling us a little bit more that they announced on day one that Pluto has snow and ice, you know, ice mountains. So the fact that we have water in our universe, in our solar system, not just here, but, you know, it seems to be quite around us is a great thing. But with the Mars analyst, I teamed up with Ross Curley and Lewis Michael Reinhardt, who is a vice president for science and education with the Mars Anomaly Research Society. And for the last 3 years, we've had a Southeast Mars Conference where, you know, we discuss different things and, you know, what's going on. And usually we've done a YouTube video every year of the conference. And the last 3 years, it was held in Homewall, Tennessee. And this year, it's going to be held on October 23rd, which is a Saturday, in Mobile, Alabama. And we're actually going to have Andrew Bishago come. And I don't know if you're familiar with Andy, but he's actually is planning on running for president. And he's a Cambridge-trained attorney, and he also was in part of the DARPA project as a child. So, and he was involved in a lot of time travel experiments as a child with the DARPA. So,
how do you spell that?
DARPA? Or Andy? DARPA, D-A-R-P-A.
D-A-R-P-A, and it stands for?
It's like the Defense Aeronautic Program or something. It's like a secret military group that does, if you look at it now, if you look it up, they're working on a lot of space flights and space, you know, future missions with craft. But it's a part of our government. But anyway, so that should be interesting and to have that. So everyone's invited to come to our Southeast Mars Conference. And more information can be found on that when, you know, closer we get to it, on the Mars Anomaly Research Society Facebook page, which is a longer name, but, you know, anybody can contact me.
Now, you in your analysis of the Mars photos, did you come to any kind of conclusion with regard to the face that's so famous, the picture of the what looks like a face?
Well, actually, on that face, you know, there's been so much on that, and now they've shown that it's, you know, eroding and all that. I've kind of have steered away from that since so many people have looked at that face on Mars. But there's many faces on Mars. There's, you know, definitely a lot of evidence that there's living creatures there possibly, and structures that look like mining. Well, some of them actually look like they might still be alive, and that's what I'm looking forward to is when the satellite image goes back over the same area. I'm looking forward to seeing the difference, you know. And I'm okay to find out if it still hasn't moved, or is it gone, you know. And that's how some of the ways that they found water was by you know, going over the same area to see the difference in it, and you almost have to wait for the satellite to go back over that same area again to know, to really look at the difference in the
Now these, you know, satellites, like even the ones that have to do with the moon, appear to only be covering part of the surface, never the whole surface.
Exactly.
Is the full surface of Mars photoed?
Not yet. And even on the ones that, like the ones that I'm using from the Mars orbiter, they'll take a strip of film and they only shoot just a little bit of it in color. And the two sides are in black and white. And then there's also older film from other orbiters. And then ESA, which is the European Space Agency, they have very good cameras and very good satellite pictures. So, you know, little by little, they're going over it, but it's taking a long time. And then, of course, we have Curiosity, which is on the ground taking pictures. So, you know, of course, it's, you know, they're all different angles because one's from a satellite and one's from the ground. But, you know, slowly they're getting there. But that's what's kind of amazing is that they've, you know, 16 months to download Pluto's pictures that they took in one day is so different than Mars. It's taken years and years just to slowly take this film. So it's going to be interesting to find what's going to come out with Pluto, you know.
Do you find this suspect that it's taking so long?
Yeah, I do. Actually, I went, the people who are in charge of this high-rise project is the Lunar and Planetary Lab at University of Arizona in Tucson, and I actually went there for a tour. It took some wrangling for me to get to go there, but the way the film is taken, each little strip is checked by a grad student to make sure it's the location, and then that film sits there. Each one of those satellite images has to be analyzed by their group of scientists and NASA before we ever get to see it. So, you know, when a new picture comes out, and you think, oh, a new picture's come out. If you look at the date when it was taken, it could be up to 2 months before. And there's been some suspect, you know, shadowing that almost looks like somebody went in there with Photoshop and just kind of, you know, smudge things around. So, but, you know, it's, yeah, I would say Mars and has been, maybe because we're so close to them. I don't know why, you know, they're hopefully they'll be a little bit more transparent with all Pluto. And now that, you know, there's water, and they just announced that they have found crystals on Mars in continental divide. They actually have a continental divide like we do. So it seems like they're getting a little bit more information out and probably slowly feeding us more and more information. But, you know, now they're talking about all... Go ahead.
They're talking about what?
Oh, and, you know, they're talking about going to Europa, you know, which has a big source of water. I mean, we're starting to kind of gear back up, I think, to actually keep exploring, and hopefully some of this secrecy will, you know, go away. So
now you've got the situation here where Pat Frascona, who you work with some, is an attorney that took on the case for two of these soldiers who 30 years after the fact did not have access to their own medical records because they were classified. All right. Now he's taken on this case, and these two gentlemen, I believe both of them have finally gotten their disability, even though they could never get their medical records to make a proper application.
Oh, well, Jim always had most of his records because he made a copy, way back when he was getting out of the service. So he had more of access to his, and that's part of the reason I think he hasn't gone through the same, path that John Burroughs went. But John did not have all his records. In fact, on some of his files, it even showed that he wasn't even in service during the time of the Rendlesham Forest incident. So they actually had him not starting to be in the Air Force till 2 years after the event. So, especially.
Somebody was messing with something there, were they not?
Yeah, something happened. Something happened on there, and so thank goodness for John McCain's office for helping, and also some individuals from part of the CIA who came in to help. So
the payment of this or the establishment of his disability. Do you see that as an admission of any kind? Is that in any way disclosure on the part of the government?
I think it is in some way, but at the same time, part of that admission is saying that it was a UAP, which is an unidentified aerial phenomenon, and that could be possibly some kind of testing. And the thing about this particular testing that would have possibly caused that damage would not show up on radar. And that's another reason this halt, even getting all these affidavits or, you know, testimonies from these people that it was on radar. That it really was on radar. I think in a way the government has kind of put it in a way that they could say, no, that could have been some kind of testing, you know. So in one way you could say it might help with disclosure, but in another way it might not, you know. I think they still kind of, you know how the government is, they kind of worked it in a way, it could work either way for them, you know. So, but it definitely is, you know, it's interesting how all this happened right at the whole thing with the whole VA big debacle in Phoenix. And, you know, John was living in Phoenix, but he did go to the VA in Tucson. So, and there were a lot of missing records for a lot of people, you know.
And what was the debacle in Phoenix?
In Phoenix, the whole VA in Phoenix, just, you know, they got on 60 Minutes, and, you know, it was just a lot
of
people.
Well, that's where we're not being treated right, or what, we're not able to get help.
Well, yeah, or like a widow would get a letter saying, you know, your husband is able to come for his surgery, and he died 8 years before. You know, they just you know, their records were so far behind. So, so in a way that, you know, I kind of wondered, did that help bring that about, or did that help John's case and help push that through, you know? So it's a, you know, but either way, John's getting, you know, help that he needed. So
now,
you know, so,
Peter Robbins has written a book, along with, I think, another man that was a bestseller, as I understand it, in England. And now this book by Nick Pope that you contributed to, Encounter at Rendlesham Forest. What is different about this book than the original or any of the other things that have been made public about Rendlesham Forest?
Well, Peter Robbins' book, it was written with Larry Warren, and his book is it's called Left at East Gate, and it was written back in the 80s, I guess. And actually, that's because probably Jim Peniston and John Burroughs would never, ever, their name would never have been put out, except for it was put in that book. If you see earlier shows about this incident, they don't have their names in it. You know, they have fake names, or any of the smaller books that had come out earlier, because there were a couple of different books that came out. Jenny Randles, I think, wrote some books about Rendlesham Forest, and none of the people's names are used. So that whole story with Peter Robbins and Larry Warren, Larry said he was out there, and on the night that Halt was out there and witnessed, I think it was Colonel Williams, he said, came up to the craft, and these two beings floated down, two or three beings floated down from the ship. So nobody else has corroborated that story that I know of. So that's part of the difference. Now, Nick's book, Encounter in Rendlesham Forest, him being military of defense, so he was like the Fox Mulder of England. And so he was the X-Files guy. So, of course, he's still on pension. So, you know, he discusses a lot of different theories and things in it. And probably the most writing in the book of a firsthand account is from Jim Peniston in the book, because he actually has more of his actual writing of what happened than John in the story. But it's basically saying what happened in, you know, by the time period. And then it actually goes into the codes, the Rendlesham codes, about the different locations. And then Nick does talk about the Condyne report, which is one of the reports that was used to help John get his disability, which discussed these UAPs, these unidentified aerial phenomenon, that can be caused by different kind of testing, you know, by whatever kind of testing they were doing back then that could cause that kind of radiation issues. But, you know, they both were affected by the radiation. They are in different ways. And, you know, and of course there's still some witnesses. You know, there was a third man out there that night, and he hasn't really come forward much. You know, he maybe in the future he will and give his story, you know, which would be very interesting.
Neither confirmed nor denied.
I might have said Adrian Bastenza was there that first night. It's actually Casabag, I think, was there the first night, and then Adrian was with the night that Larry Warren was there. So if Adrian would ever come forth, or the other person who was out there, you know, it'll be interesting to get what they remember, what they saw, because they all had to go to the OSI department, you know, the part that sits there and interrogates you and I know that Jim was put under sodium pentothal. I'm sure all of them were. And, you know, that can really mess with you, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
the training that you've received as a certified hypnotherapist with Dr. Raymond Moody, have you at any time having to do with UFO witnesses utilized your work there on that?
Yes, I have done some people with their basically working with the trauma, because really it's something of that respect leaves trauma on them. Even though I have worked very closely with John and Jim, I have not hypnotized them, or I really don't think at this point it's a good idea for anyone who's that familiar with the case to hypnotize, because you could so easily, you know, lead somebody. I think John's hypnosis is his two that I know of. People started asking questions that were of their own agenda, and I think that might have clouded things. Jim's hypnosis was done by a doctor because he went for unable to sleep. So that doctor actually was looking for trauma in him, even as a child, you know, started from, you know, age one or two, looking for what could have caused this trauma. And actually, when he woke up, she said, "Tell me what happened at Wendelsham Forest." And he went, "Oh, no," you know, because he wasn't expecting that to have come up. So I have had
but
some
he
people
must have
who
been,
have...
He must have been talking about it for her to ask that question, right?
Oh, yeah, and she taped it. So you can see excerpts from that on YouTube. You can see both of their hypnosis. One thing I don't like about John's is that on one of them, the woman kept touching John's shoulder, but not informing him first, and he would jump, you know. I mean, so would actually frighten him. And and then the other one, you know, they did it in a way that he was still having that fear. And I don't like, you know, I'd rather have people be able to not have to relive the fear of it. They can still, they can watch it like a movie, but I think that's putting somebody in undue stress. So a lot of times
you're trained in this case not to lead and allow them to relate their incidences without any kind of leading, aren't you? We're just down to a few seconds. You've got a final comment?
That I've enjoyed talking to you tonight. I really have. And I'm looking forward to, you know, there's so much that's happened in just these last few days with all these different things with HALT and Pluto and, discoveries.
I want you to come back and update us after some of these things have come out, okay?
Okay, great. That sounds wonderful. I want you to come to Jackson sometime and speak down here, too. So that'd be great.
All right.
I look
forward to
wonderful.
It. Just let me know.
Thank you so much, Jim.
For being with us. And folks, thank you for being with us on the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program tonight. And check with us at 8:30 next Wednesday. Have a good evening, everyone.
Good night. Bye.
Good night.
That could cripple months. I just can't believe he had to do this.
seriously not going
we
to happen.
We are sorry that it's not going to happen.
This is it.
Don't you.
He'll pop his face up.
This ass is a camper up here or something.
Camper like that's the only one I know that's still got the windows in.
Check it back through back there. I'm not sure you live, lab.
No meth lab and no sign of the fugitive.
You want to check that?
Calm down! Stop! One click, come on. Stop.
Closing photos of four unsolved homicides which took place in the last 12 months. Flesh has been surgically removed from each of the victim's extremities. I'm missing my petty. I'm going to spare myself the pleasure if you don't mind.
Okay, Thelma. Zoom.
I had to figure to do him talking doll, but well, when he says that he's lanky in a cold, damp, dirty cell, I am obliged point out that not only ain't accurate, but that's just downright insulting my Aunt Lucy that cleans this place every morning. What's the matter with you? She's the cleanest woman you ever laid eyes on. It ain't been a year that she ain't won the shirt washing contest down at the county fair.
Ask her what that's got to do with stocking me $100
on
a fight on a violation. Go on, ask her.
How about that, Mr. Taylor? Well, I will admit that fine, but what he done is usually no more than $5.
There!
But! Most folks in these parts of $5 puts a great big roll of money, and he says to me with his nose in the air, and that takes in a mess of sky. He says, let's get it over with. He says, how much is it? $5? $10? Still a little $5 or $10 bill. Couldn't have meant less, Mr. Wick. So I just had to heavy up the price so he'd feel the weight of the law a little bit, Zach.
Well, do you mean you have different standards of punishment for big people than for little people?
Well, why not? It appears to me a great big entertainer like Mr. Williams here influences a lot of people. They look up to him, admire him, maybe even follow the example he set. So the way I see it, a big man has got more of a responsibility to obey the law and respect the folks who enforce it, even though they might be what he calls rubes and hicks.
Is that what Mr. Williams calls you?
Sometimes. And other times he is downright rude. Hey, Mr. Williams here feels that he's a victim of cruel, unjust punishment, and that's not what I had in mind at all. And Mr. Williams seems to be in a powerful hurry. That may be why he didn't see that stop sign. Yes, Mr. Williams and a lot of folks like him think that he left from in the city he's going to. And between them two cities, there's a lot of mighty good folks to meet, and a lot of wonderful experiences to be had by a fellow that will take the time, you know, to appreciate. So, I don't know, I was just trying to slow Mr. Williams down a little bit.
Well, I just...
Carl, let's keep her here. She needs your forgiveness.
Tell her I...
She can hear you.
Andrea, I wish the same thing
wanted it to be me on that plane. And you're still safe. Still alive. And you were always the one who lived. I was always so cautious and so worried about the rules. What people think. You always charged ahead. You're the one who should have gotten more life.
Remember that every person that knew you was better for it. Especially, you taught me to be fearless. And you loved really well. And you were loved, and that's what you're bringing into that light and nothing else.
Going to Cisco County, connecting to Chicago. You're all set. Just need to see a photo ID.
Oh, shoot. I left my ID in the car.
You got time. Go and get it. Just come back to the front of the line.
One of the papers that was sent to the Board of Governors contains an annex to the list of 10 or 11 or 12, I don't remember right now, areas which Iran had alleged actually investigated aspects of developing nuclear weapons. They included weapon design work, the high explosives, the triggering, et cetera, fusing and firing systems. And now the Director General has traveled to Tehran a week ago and has come back with an agreement that will allow the IAEA to enter into this activity and reach a conclusion.
Security prison. Joaquin El Chapo Guzman with an almost $4 million reward on his head tonight. But Mexico telling foreign governments, including that of the United States, that they don't want any help in their efforts to capture him. Why? We'll have the answer. And the Greek Parliament has a new austerity and reform package moments ago, just hours before that vote, protests and demonstrations in the streets of Athens. Tonight's yes vote, critical for the country to receive a bailout from the European Union and the International Monetary Fund, some $96 billion. Those protests that you're looking at there turning violent just a couple of hours ago, but dying down now with the vote, the path is paved for more of that money to come from the European Union to save the bankrupt Greek government. Our top story tonight, the president's hard sell on what critics are calling a terrible deal that would pave the way for Iran to create a legitimate structure for them to obtain a nuclear weapon. Fox News White House correspondent Kevin Cork with our report.
It was a robust defense. For more than an hour, President Obama took aim at critics of the historic deal struck with Iran on its nuclear program.
The deal is not contingent on Iran changing its behavior. Not contingent on Iran suddenly operating like a liberal democracy. It solves one particular problem, which is making sure they don't have a bomb.
Ironically, the agreement has been hailed in Tehran, but criticized in Jerusalem, and left many in Washington with very serious questions, given Iran more leverage.
The notion that I'm content as I celebrate with American citizens languishing in Iranian jails. Measure that. That's nonsense. And you should know better.
On lifting the arms embargo that was designed to keep Iran from obtaining ballistic.
And we got 8 years from the site of ballistic missiles.
But what about the timing of inspection? The president said the regime couldn't avoid 24/7 monitoring for sites already known. But getting into suspected secret facilities will take longer.
As for the fact that it may take 24 days to finally get access to the site, the nature of nuclear programs and facilities is such a, this is not something you buy in the closet.
The president didn't argue the fact that the Iranians would have more money with sanctions listed, but added,
do I think it's a game changer for them? No.
Meanwhile, many lawmakers who have 60 days to review the agreement remain strong in their opposition to the deal.
We have now made a third-rate autocracy equivalent to a world power, a threshold nuclear power. Unfortunately, it's not as bad as we had feared. It's actually much worse.
In an effort to solidify a coalition of at least 34 senators to protect the plan, Vice President Joe Biden made a rare trip to Capitol Hill. The Vice President's presentation to House Democrats lasted about 70 minutes, give or take, and at least for the time being, Lou, the White House has the numbers in both the House and the Senate to make sure that this deal survives. Lou?
Kevin, thank you very much. Kevin Cork from the White House. Something the President did not mention in his news conference, the death 2 weeks ago of Kate Steinle, a death that sparked wide outrage. The 32-year-old was murdered on a San Francisco pier by an illegal immigrant, a convicted felon, who had been deported 5 times and released from prison earlier this year because of San Francisco's sanctuary city policy. Just yesterday, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson didn't appear to know who Kate Steinle was, and he couldn't say whether the administration had reached out to her family. San Francisco's mayor is defending sanctuary cities, some 276 of them now in the country, and he blamed the San Francisco sheriff's policy of not communicating with Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Our sanctuary policy was never intended to create a safe haven for criminals that tear our communities apart. It does not protect criminals. This policy is a threat to public safety. This policy should be rescinded immediately.
Thanks for a city blank stamp. The criminal illegal immigrants into our streets over just a period of 8 months. Mexicans.
I got you that one. How do you? Mom says you have a lot of that stuff. Expensive. What about your dad? What about him? Where is he? In the grass. You hang out of y'all. Want to check my pocket?
Stepped away from the negotiating table in the last 6 weeks or so, I know what would have happened. The sanctions regime, the pressure on Iran would have diminished or dissipated altogether. The unity of the P5 countries would have been weakened, and all the restrictions on Iran's nuclear program would have been lifted. So I think if that's the construct, Obama's deal versus this no-deal option of the critics, I take Obama's deal.
Yeah. A lot of what Nick is saying, I think, is something I would agree with. I guess my position at this point is I would really like some of the questions to be addressed by the administration. I would like to know how the administration is going to bolster our deterrence vis-a-vis the Iranians, precisely because once they are...
It goes right, well, this time...
Yeah.
Cowboys, as well as wide receiver.
Who do you not like in real life? Tell me some of your pet peeves.
I don't know if it's stupid people so much. I don't know. I think it's national honor too. I'm speaking. You're kind of an Asian.
and they need time to figure things out. You know, maybe he's hoping that this date will spark something.
Well, it couldn't spark something.
Just because I was in the shower, you
no,
agreed.
No. What about? Come pour on their home.
I'm sorry that I have to bring you.
Hey, no burden.
Just used to having Andrea to publicly sing it out. Who are you?
I'm not sure.
What do you want?
I don't know.
Do you know why you came to me?
You can help me.
How did you die? Were you hit by a car?
I think so. I don't remember everything exactly.
What does September 29th mean?
Don't you know?
No.
And I don't either.
Do you have someone know what happened to you?
I had a wife. And he's quit.
Maine?
She may not know. Will you tell her?
Well, I'm sure you had ID on you. The police have probably called her by now.
That was no good to her. I heard her. I have to say I'm sorry.
Do you remember her name?
Donna. Donna Ellis.
And what's your name?
I think people called me Mac.
Well, Mac Eastwick is not exactly around the corner, so I don't know that I can...
You'll have to find her. See her.
Why?
I heard you guess. Mocha latte.
Oh, works for me. That's so nice.
Consider it a peace offering. I think my son paid you another visit the other day.
Oh, man, he's good. We were talking the whole time.
Yes, it makes Mother proud.
Sorry, I didn't mean to make light of this.
No, no, I am so grateful that you're not upset. Honestly, I don't know what his problem is. It has been really hard on him.
For you too.
The shopper.
I'm still fine with it. Thanks. That's all. I've been fine. I'm Italian. I'm Virgil Keller. I used to be Italian. Now I'm a Buddhist. Just kidding.
Sonny Grasso and Travis Rickman will report to Ring 3.
Thank you.
sponsor, U.S. Ross.
4 yards. Robinson, 4 carries for only 10 yards.
Dennis and I have both negotiated the qualitative military edge that we want Israel to have versus any potential foe in the Middle East. There's more we can do to strengthen Israel. We need to narrow the gap. That's just, I think, common sense diplomacy for the year ahead.
I hear you. And Dennis, you as well know the Prime Minister of Israel very well and have negotiated with him. The President always reminds his audience that it was the Prime Minister of Israel who, how many months ago, warned that the initial agreement would not hold, and that the Prime Minister of Israel was wrong there, and he is wrong now.
But there is no question that the Prime Minister of Israel feels that this is somehow subjecting Israel to dramatically greater threats. To be fair to him, he's not alone in Israel.
Right.
I mean, you've seen Tzipi Livni came out with a statement. Bushi Herzog came out with a statement as well. The statements may not take on the full character of what Prime Minister Netanyahu is saying, but they reflect that there is a profound fear that an Iran that is legitimized as a nuclear threshold state could become a nuclear weapon state, and an Iran that suddenly has all this additional money to cause trouble, to be providing money to Hezbollah. They have provided 100,000 rockets to Hezbollah that cover the whole state of Israel. They have provided clear monetary support to Hamas.
I'm Betty Joe. I'm Bobby Joe. I'm Billy Joe. For little sister Kylie, who is right now all about comedy, she posted this old clip from